How you doing, Grange?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Better than Dwayne Casey, at least. That was Dwayne Casey last night after that 123-102 loss to the Thunder, apologizing. I don't know how you feel about it, Mike. I'm not a big fan of coaches apologizing to fans. To me, it's sort of like the last straw of desperation coaches is to apologize to the fans. But having said that, Mike, and acknowledging that Russell Westbrook is really, really good, and acknowledging that Kyle Lowry isn't there, that was a really puzzling display, because I don't know if I'd go as far as Dwayne Casey and say I thought they turned the corner against Dallas, but I thought they'd figured out some things against Dallas, and boy, was I wrong.
Well, the problem when you're playing Russell Westbrook is your margin for error is really, really slim. And, you know, it's just interesting kind of rewatching the game this morning. And, you know, I was kind of puzzled, what really set Dwayne Casey off? What had inspired that players only meeting? You know, the references were, we just weren't ready to play. They came out like the championship game. We came out like it was a midseason game. And you look at the first 5 minutes of the game, and there's a lot of evidence. And there's a lot of guys with blood on their hands, so to speak. And what you're looking at is just really small kind of mental mistakes that, you know, when you're playing against a team that's, maybe not that locked in, maybe they burn you, maybe they don't. But you're playing against the Oklahoma City team that's on a roll. Russell Westbrook is clearly at the absolute peak of his game, his powers. And every single time, certainly in that first quarter and beyond, it ended up in the Raptors' basket. But what's interesting is when Dwayne Casey – well, I'll leave it there. But what's interesting with Dwayne Casey's comments is I'm going to find 7, 8, 9 guys who want to compete. There's some pretty high-profile guys who probably would, weren't ready last night.
Well, he's got 12 players. So, you know what I mean? I mean, I was going to say it can't be that hard.
Yeah, but you're looking at that first quarter. I mean, the guys that really jumped out to me were DeMar DeRozan, who made, multiple kind of alertness and effort-based errors.
Mm-hmm.
On the defensive side of the ball. And, we're talking really simple stuff. Just, there's one possession there. I think Steven Adams second play of the game. Victor Oladipo goes backdoor on Damari Carroll.
Right.
Oladipo's kind of gathered under the basket. Everyone collapses on him. DeMar DeRozan, he's got Roberson in the corner. And you look in the video, DeMar DeRozan, he's completely lost his man. His back is entirely to his man. He's not really helping on the ball. He's not really in any kind of position to make any impact on the play. And his man, Roberson, is the one who kind of slides in behind him and gets the ball for a layup. First play of the game, Jonas Valanciunas has Steven Adams in the post. I can guarantee you that the scouting report on Steven Adams is make him go to his left hand, shoot over his right shoulder, and sure enough, JV has him. The ball's on in Adams' left hand. He's picked up his dribble. He has nowhere to go. JV falls for a simple little fake. Adams goes back to his right hand and scores an easy jump hook. I mean, one play after another like that, they add up. That's what my point being is, those are your key guys. These are your guys who are under long-term contracts. And, they're the ones making the big errors. I don't know how you correct that in terms of your rotation.
I was talking to a caller in the last hour, I'm wondering, and we were talking about kind of Dwayne Casey's coaching, and Mike, I'm wondering if we, the fact that this team and I'm going to make this clear, I'm not laying this all on Damari Carroll, but when Damari Carroll came here, he was going to be a very significant player for this team. He was going to be, I think we all thought he's going to be a starter. He was going to be a regular. And he hasn't played very well, I don't think, when he started. And, of course, we all know about his health issues. And I'm wondering, not to lay it all on one guy, Mike, but I'm wondering if maybe Damari Carroll, it's very hard for Dwayne Casey to coach around what Damari Carroll isn't giving him right now. I think Damari Carroll creates a huge issue for this team.
Yeah, there's something to that. I would just say in counter is there have been other stretches this season, certainly after the first sort of 10, 15, 20 games when he was kind of struggling just to gain his legs again, where Damari Carroll was very good for this team. And I think when you look at when this team has been at its best, Damari Carroll has been healthy. He's kind of given them the energy you'd expect and given them some reliable three-point shooting, which he's kind of – that's what distinguishes him from your run-of-the-mill role player. The problem is every time he kind of gets a few games like that going, something happens. So his knee flares up or he breaks his finger or he sprains his ankle, and it takes him a while to get back up to speed. So, I don't think Damari Carroll's the – primary issue on this team. I would say that, it's pretty easy to kind of run around and start pulling your hair out. And certainly the way the Raptors responded after the game last night kind of, that opens the door to all kinds of panic and speculation. And, but every team in this league that's lost their key guy, and we're not, and Kyle Lowry is by every measure a top 10, top 15 player in the league in terms of his overall impact on games, they struggle. So Chris Paul, I think when he was down, the Clippers went 8-13. We've seen Golden State kind of all kinds of cracks and fissures show once Kevin Durant gets hurt, and they still have a pretty good roster behind him. Cavaliers are a tire fire without LeBron James and on down the list. So, I think the key thing to remember here is I think the Raptors are they're 7-5. They have a winning record without Lowry right now. Hasn't been pretty. You can't really expect it to be pretty. But the primary concern after a game like you saw last night was they have no margin for error. And if you're going to, regardless if it's Damari Carroll, DeMar DeRozan, I think, he was a significant offender last night. Jonas Valanciunas was a significant offender last night. When you're not hitting the floor, mentally locked in, ready to make very basic fundamental plays that are either on your scouting report or have been kind of coached into you since you were probably 7 years old, your team's going to look bad. And Damari Carroll, sure, he's got to wear some of that too, but I don't think he's the reason this team's going to rise or fall.
Okay, Mike, give me 7 guys on the Raptors who can compete tonight. If you're Dwayne Casey, what do you do tonight against Detroit?
Well, if he was really bold, I mean, it'd be interesting if he was, if he was going to make a real significant change in his rotation, would he be bold enough to go with Jakob Poeltl against Andre Drummond? I don't know. Would you really benefit from that? I don't know. I think it's one of those things coaches say, but then when they actually look and put it down on paper, are you really going to go that way? They've got to get some production out of Pat Patterson. He's either his knee is still an issue or, he's got to put that behind him and he's got to play better because, you can't be, there's a guy who, before he got hurt, would the Raptors be able to afford him? And the way he's played in the last month or 6 weeks, it's, why would the Raptors want him? And that's got to change. I don't think there is going to be a lot of changes in the rotation just because, as we spoke about, when that was kind of a team effort in terms of failure and you don't have that, you can't call up, a whole bunch of guys from the AHL. So I think it's a more of a case of, hopefully whatever was said in that meeting after the game takes root. And when your peers put pressure on you, hopefully it really works and they have to collectively, play with a lot more purpose than they did last night.
What are you making of DeMar's game or DeMar's game last night. I mean, you pointed out, and it was pointed out in the telecast as well, when people talking about a lack of effort, DeMar, there was not criticism spared of DeMar. Is DeMar just getting worn down?
You know, it could be that. It's really hard at this point to kind of separate, you know, what the issues are, you know, when you do struggle a bit, a lot of issues that are kind of culminating in the background, they come to the surface, and when you start winning, they go away again. But, you know, I think for DeMar DeRozan, the knock on him is, you know, when he's scoring, he helps you, but if he's not, does he? And, you know, that's if you want to be a key player on a team that goes to an NBA final and or repeats to go to a conference final, you can't pick and choose what parts of the game you're going to play. And, you know, and even if it's a case of you might be a little bit disenchanted and, you know, it's a big drop to play with Kyle Lowry as your point guard to Corey Joseph as your point guard. And that's not meant to offend Corey Joseph or anyone close to him that's listening. I mean, he is what he is. I mean, he's a good backup point guard, but Kyle Lowry is a superb NBA star. And so to the point, you know, is DeMar DeRozan getting frustrated just because so much is being expected of him right now? I don't know, but he is a max player effectively. And this is winning time. And the very least he can be looked upon to do is to be locked in on every possession, both sides of the floor. He wasn't last night. He'll need to be tonight. And if he can't be, then, you know, you kind of get a fuller picture of what's holding him back from being, you know, at the absolute upper tier superstar in the game.
Mike Leo, Paul Jones, and a couple of other people are all adamant that this is the second best team in the East. And you know, with Kyle, again, that has to be said. How confident are you that this is the second best team in the East with Kyle?
I'm pretty confident. You know, like I don't know if I would go so far as adamant. You know, I really like the Wizards and their personnel and, you know, how dynamic they can be. I think they have more athleticism, more pure star power, if you will. You know, I just think as a group, when you look at Beal, Wall, Otto Porter Jr., I think that threesome has greater upside than anyone in the conference outside of Cleveland, really. But, you know, the Raptors have better depth, they have better experience, and, you know, I really, really would like to see what this team would look like with Kyle Lowry running the show. I think it has all the pieces, it has the balance, it has the experience. It's shown in this last 10, 12 games they can occasionally be very, very good defensively as well. And, you know, if those ingredients all come together, there's no reason they can't, you know, kind of roll through the playoffs and make some noise in a conference final. But, you know, you got to get there first. You got to get there in good shape and good feeling good about your game. Otherwise, you know, things could unravel really quick.
You know, Mike, you spend an awful lot of time around the team. And we had a caller ask a question today, and I kind of struggled to answer it because I admit up front, you know, I really like Dwayne Casey. And I have a hard time criticizing Dwayne Casey, which is probably not a good thing to do when you host a talk show, but I mean, at least I admit it. I just do. What do you see when you see Dwayne Casey coaching?
I'm not
asking you to criticize him, but what are his strengths and weaknesses?
I think he's a really good coach. I think he's a really, really well prepared coach. You know, I think if you're going to wonder what makes him a little bit different than, you know, where he could be better or where, you know, the criticism might come regarding him, I think there's always been a bit of a question about how determined he is in challenging his very best players. And, you know, that said, DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry have had absolutely the best years of their career playing for Dwayne Casey. They've improved year over year. So whatever he's doing with them is working. By any measure. And, you know, and I think there's been some question about, Yeah, I've never really bought into the idea that he's not a great play caller or his rotations and all these kinds of things. I mean,
he's not a great late game coach, right?
Sometimes that stuff works, sometimes it doesn't, and it just gets magnified depending on the situation. I mean, I think it's easy to point to plays or rotations or decisions that don't pan out. When things do pan out, it's not very often that the headline is, "Wow, great game!" It's the players who succeeded. It's very rarely the coaches who get the credit. So. So I think, is coaching an issue at this point in the season? I really don't know. I don't have any inside knowledge to that. And you go back to the criticisms that, the comments that Kyle Lowry was making, before the trade deadline, you do reach a stage in a season where I think a lot of people are frustrated with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I would be very surprised if, It would be almost unnatural if at some point during the last couple of months when the Raptors have, things have been pretty rocky, that there isn't some voice in the dressing room where, sure, it's not like coaching isn't going to get discussed.
Right.
But I think you get Kyle Lowry back, you win 2-3 in a row. I don't think a lot of that, like I said, goes away.
All right, before we let you run, we've now seen Russell Westbrook in person at the Air Canada Centre. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who's your MVP?
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. He was really impressive to watch last night.
That one pass he threw, and it was all over social media.
It wasn't one pass. I mean, that pass itself was incredible.
Right.
But what really struck me, is particularly in that stretch in the second quarter where he kind of took over the game, was just how fluid and how slick and, I'd be guilty of sometimes just getting caught up with the force and energy and speed he plays at. But when you're watching in person, he does have a lot of gears to his game, and a lot of his assists are really that he's created by, kind of little subtle angles he's found in a defense, and he puts his passes on time, on target. And it's interesting, James Harden and him have very similar assist totals, but it'd be interesting to break down how many of Harden's assists go to guys who are basically wide open at the three, which, believe me, that's pretty important too. But, Westbrook, he's creating no dribble layups for guys. If you just kind of have your hands ready and you're sliding into spaces at the right time, you're getting layups. And mm-hmm. Steve Adams, he looks like Will Chamberlain playing with that guy. put it this way, it's remarkable. I think in NBA history, the last guy to win an MVP for a team that didn't have a top four record in their conference, I think, was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in 1976. And the last player that didn't win an MVP as a one or two seed was Karl Malone in 98-99,
right,
after the lockout year. But that year, the Jazz were tied for the top three record in the league. They just were third seed based on tiebreakers. So, that's really what he's fighting against, is that his team's probably going to be a sixth seed. And you've got a guy like Harden who's having an incredible year, pulling a team from nowhere into a three seed, and LeBron James, who really is kind of getting overlooked because he's having an incredible year for Cleveland, but we all just take it for granted. So I don't know who my MVP is. Sorry, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. No, we talked a little bit about it yesterday. We talked about Paul Jones. I mean, it's I've done MVP. I've voted on MVP awards in baseball. And kind of looking at this one from a distance, honestly, there's four or five ways you could go. I mean, I guess you could probably make a case for John Wall if Washington continues to run run rampant. I mean, I don't think you would pick him over Westbrook, but you could probably make an argument at least.
Kawhi Leonard's starting to get momentum, and it's sort of like all the Spurs do is keep winning 65 games a year.
Yeah.
He's their best player on both ends of the floor, and they haven't missed a beat after the retirement of Tim Duncan. And you look at the Spurs lineup, Pau Gasol is well past his prime. He's doing some incredible work, and it's been an amazing, amazing, amazing year for individual performances in the NBA. It really right. has, and that's a cop out. But
no,
watching Russell Westbrook in person, I wouldn't have said before the game that he would be my MVP, but I'm a lot. He certainly moved the needle for me last night.
Well, and another sort of view of this as well is you could argue that what has happened with Golden State reinforces how important Kevin Durant is to that team and how valuable he is to that team. That's a different argument, mind you, but
yeah, well, that's it. I mean, at the point Durant went down, you know, I don't think he would have got MVP, real consideration for the MVP just because that roster was so deep in superstars. But there was another guy just having, just a shocking year in terms mm-hmm. of his production. And, and Anthony Davis, people kind of overlook him. He's having a season that statistically, I don't even think, it's unique. Like, no one's ever compiled the numbers across the board that Anthony Davis has. Or maybe Hakeem Olajuwon, I could be mistaken there. But there's a lot of incredible individual performances. Russell Westbrook's you'd say there's never been anything like it, except that James Harden, mm-hmm. for a couple of rebounds a game, is doing the same thing. It's just incredible.